You know, I didn't mean to do the Fox theme, the 20th Century Fox, but I ended up doing it accidentally, so I guess that's just what the intro to this is going to be now.
Yep.
It's actually 21st century is the thing that really fucks you up, though.
Yeah, it's a 21st century digital fox.
Yeah.
It doesn't know how to read, but it has a lot of box.
Fire! God, that's maybe the worst change in Ultimate is the change of Fox's voice.
Yeah, that's the only bad change in Ultimate.
Mm-hmm. It's true, yeah. But we're only going to talk about good changes to Ultimate today, because we have the Ultimate episode of the year, which is to say the final episode of the year.
Yep. This is, of course, the Net Surfies.
Da-da-da-da! Yay! Claps, 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 claps.
We would clap, but that would peak the microphone.
Yes.
Hosted by both of us this time. We're both on the host seat.
Yes, we're both on the host seat and the hot seat. And the whole seat, if we're removing letters.
Yes.
Because we are, of course, a week away from Christmas. Exactly a week as of the recording.
Oh, yeah. That's actually... I didn't even realize that. But yes.
And we're on the O seat because we're going to be talking about things that make us go, oh!
And we're on the OC because we will also be talking about things that make us go, what you say?
And we're on the Lonely Island because we'll be talking about things that make this go, what you say?
I am your equal host, Galen, and with me is, as always...
The other equal host, Matt.
Yes, so we decided that we wanted to do an end-of-year sort of awards ceremony.
Yes, the fun thing about award ceremonies is that since they're all made up, you can make your own award ceremonies. Decentralize awards.
They should have votes for awards.
I mean, they do, and that's how Dream won Content Creator of the Year.
Oh, God, you're right.
But we have our own Content Creators of the Year that we can talk about, and other things.
Yes. To briefly explain, we have a list of categories that we're going to be going through, and we'll, you know, explain why, you know, whatever's on that category is on that category. But for the, like, positive categories, I want to stress that when we pick a best, that does not mean that any of the others are not good. So if something is on this list, it means that it is worthwhile. It is worth your time.
We also, just because something isn't, like, nominated doesn't mean that we hated it. There's a lot of things that we would probably like, but we haven't gotten around to. A lot of those will be honorable mentions.
Yes.
Other honorable mentions are things that just barely didn't make the cut for one reason or another. But we don't have too many of those because then we'd have to, you know, spend more than the current length of the podcast. Insert length of podcast here. So, you know, to not keep it any time past insert length of podcast here, we'll be just doing our regular nominations and then, of course, we'll have a winner.
I would like to just interject and say that, Matthew has said that, you know, if it's not on here, it doesn't mean that we don't like it. That's actually Matthew speaking for themselves. If it isn't on here, I actually hated it.
God damn it. Okay.
There were only like six long form things that I liked this year.
To be fair, the year itself was a long form thing and I did not like it. So,
yeah,
but there was a lot of good this year. So we're going to be focusing on that.
Yes.
Mainly. So yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to have each category, we're going to name the nominations, give a short little pitch on each of them, and then we'll name the winner.
Yep. So let's just jump right into our first category.
Yes.
So
the first category is best longest.
So this is the category for long form content. Obviously, with, you know, YouTube video essays and or streams, they're very, very long, you know, sometimes going up to like 8 hours, especially for streaming. And so we wanted to honor those who put in the time.
Yes, the long time. The nominees are, for Best Longest, Action Button Reviews, Cyberpunk 2077. The Action Button Reviews series has been fantastic. Tim Rogers is an inspiring writer, an inspiring critic as well. And I think Cyberpunk 2077 is the highlight of that. Even though I was genuinely debating whether to put that or the Tokimeki Memorial Review on this sort of episode. But I think the structure and the content of the Cyberpunk review is very good, and it also does a good job at recapping the year in Cyberpunk as a whole.
The Ludwig Subathon. Ludwig, a popular streamer, had 30, I believe, unbroken days of just complete streaming, with his channel never stopping streaming, even if he himself, you know, was away from the camera. It was really impressive, and he broke the world record. There was a lot of fun during that time. A lot of other streamers got in on the event, and it was a really interesting sort of, you know, get-together, basically.
Noah Caldwell Gervais, Resident Evil thorough analysis. Noah Caldwell Gervais is another fantastic game critic, and he played through and reviewed every Resident Evil game, even the bad ones. And then some. I think he talked about the movies a bit as well. It's a great retrospective on a series that has kind of always been in the periphery of me, at least. And it goes up to 7 and 8, which are both sort of nominal, phenomenal kind of returns to form. But seeing that whole journey and seeing it so eloquently discussed is a real treat.
Quentin Reviews, iCarly. Quentin Reviews is kind of more of a, like, cultural sort of critic, I would say, at this point. Before his two-part iCarly special, both of which were 5 hours long, he had multiple five-hour videos over, one was over, like, Fred. And he also had one after that was about Victorious, which is kind of continuing the series. But the important thing is that it really kicked off with a full retrospective of iCarly. And it was a really interesting way to sort of revisit. iCarly, I think, is very sort of like half remembered by our generation, but also half remembered fondly. So it was sort of interesting to go back and actually sort of dissect it past the parts that we just remember towards the stuff that we probably put in the back of our minds for a good reason.
And Tim Heidecker's Office Hours, a live stream that Tim Heidecker did with two other comedians. I don't remember the names of them, I'm very sorry. But it was a 10-hour live stream of him playing essentially a Joe Rogan parody, where the whole thing is filled with sort of quasi-philosophical fluff words, and him just going like, wow, that's so interesting, the whole time. But it is great as a long-form character, actor, like, parody satire of Joe Rogan in his general experience.
So those are all of the nominees, but we do have a special mention, an honorable mention, which is JXC's Doctor Who video, 5-hour Doctor Who video. Unfortunately, neither of us did watch this. I am subscribed to JXC. I like their content quite a bit, but I had the time for everything Quentin Reviews this year. I did not have the time for the Doctor Who video. So apologies, but, you know, we would like to sort of shout them out still.
Yes. And the winner is Noah Caldwell Gervais, Resident Evil thorough look. I kind of said everything I wanted to say on it beforehand.
Yeah, Noah Caldwell Gervais is one of my favorite content creators, like, genuinely top 10. And seeing the absolute thorough sort of dissection in a good way was extremely interesting, especially because, like you said, it's kind of been on the periphery of my sort of vision. But it's also interesting to kind of, like, have it in context of the time as well. And, yeah, Noah does not ever waste a single minute. And with that, Longest is out of the way, and we go on to Smallest, which is our Small Creator of the Year. Now, this is a bit of a ironic award to give.
Yes. These are, of course, people who are larger than us, but smaller than large people.
Yes. It's a bit of an ironic thing to have here, but I wanted to basically start this tradition now because, like, we're going to be shouting out a lot of big people, but I want to also give a lot of love to the smaller forum people. Like, one of the people who we're going to be talking about here could have easily been someone on Best Longest, but yeah, I want to have a specific section to shout out all of the creators that you might not have ever heard of that deserve your time.
Yes, these are all sub 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. I'm not sure about Twitch followers, but I'm assuming that's kind of the similar numbers for Twitch followers. for those that do both.
I would probably say 10K, but like...
But yeah. these are all people, specifically YouTubers, that we're talking about in this section.
Yes.
The nominees for Small Creator are... Eric Crosby, who has been doing video essays on all of Arkane Studios games. He has some phenomenal examinations of sort of the cultural influences of Dishonored and the sort of political allegories within Dishonored, as well as a recent video that did a really interesting analysis of Area X and House of Leaves in context of Control, but more about the books than the game.
Tess Snaker, spelled T-E-H Snaker-er. Tess Snaker is a long-form video essayist who has really interesting sort of critiques of the games that he looks into. Notably, he has done every Yakuza game up to Yakuza 5 and is going to do a Yakuza 0 and Yakuza 6 video as well. But he has been putting out a whole lot of really, really interesting content. I believe his most recent video was over Watch Dogs Legion, and it was a really interesting sort of take on not just the game, but also a lot of, like, you know, Ubisoft sort of style and, you know, how the game could have taken cues from other video games. He's great. I like a lot of his content.
Nizumi VA. Nizumi VA is a, she's done a lot of videos on Sonic games, sort of retrospectives on the series, especially her most recent one is a hour-long retrospective of Sonic Heroes that I think does a good job articulating a lot of points that I've seen about it, as well as points that I've had about it, which was pretty neat to see, sort of, I don't know, other people mentioning those. Also, she did a really good video on the Germa Dollhouse and Inside, and how they present sort of a interesting look at the role of a content creator. And I believe as of releasing this episode, her most recent video will be a retrospective on Danganronpa 1.
Nice.
So, yeah, she does good content. Check it out.
Bob Dunga. Bob Dunga is a kind of like mid-2000s like nostalgia creator. I could probably most compare her to Billiam, if you know Billiam, the bigger creator. It's a lot of very eclectic sort of videos over like mid-2000s products and stuff, with a kind of specifically feminine edge as well, because there's a lot of like interesting girl toys from that era. But I would say the big reason she's on the list is because she actually made it a goal to find pieces of lost media, specifically the Mean Girls DS game, and she actually succeeded. She also found another big girl game of lost media girl game. She found another one that I don't remember the name of, but she contributed quite a bit to the lost media community this year, and I really wanted to shout her out for that.
Marcel Voss, the sort of go-to guy for Roller Coaster Tycoon 2. Marcel Voss makes videos about Roller Coaster Tycoon. Most of them are in more of a sort of scientific role, looking at deep dives into game mechanics. He did one on how to make like an inescapable maze in the game that abuses the game's pathfinding system. He's also done a lot on like the most profitable rides, the longest possible roller coaster, the highest excitement rating. A lot of these sort of like, not really challenges, but just experiments done with the game. But he also has just sort of become the general figurehead for RCT2 at times for that sort of style of play. He appeared in the NoClip documentary on RCT2. So yeah, Marcel Voss is just really, really clever YouTuber. Really great accent. He does do live streams on Twitch, but I think it's a smaller following than on YouTube. So, you know, still counts.
And those are our picks. But
Is actually one more I wanted to add before we go to the honorable mention.
Oh, yes. Please.
Which is Jack of All Spades 98, who is a Chain Reaction artist, or as some people might know it, Rube Goldberg Machines. He does a style of like very, very physics-based chain reactions that use a lot of interesting applications of like magnetism, potential energy, like bands and things that are being pulled in specific ways. It's hard to explain, but what it ends up being is these sort of whimsical contraptions that like move the pieces around in different ways that you wouldn't really expect. And all of his machines end up being these really fun treats of, like, slowly but steadily pulling out these new tricks and new sort of applications of basic physics properties.
That sounds extremely interesting. I think you've shown me some of his videos. And, yes. Yeah, they are a treat. But we also have an honorable mention, which is Hazel. Hazel is a small creator who does a lot of, like, anime and manga, deep dives, but also does sort of a lot of deep dives into just kind of whatever she wants. One of my favorite videos is over the Flatwoods Monster, just finding every single instance of this random cryptid in video games. But we both really love her content, and she probably would have won, but she very recently broke 100K.
Yes, so that puts it over the target amount for us.
Yes, so good for her, but also you couldn't have waited like
a month.
One month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of her content is based around like 90s and 2000s anime, especially in like early web content, web 1.0. So it's really interesting to see it for like the time capsule aspect.
Yeah.
And the winner for small creator is Bob Dunga.
Bob Dunga is probably one of my favorite creators, and we really wanted to shout her out for getting lost media, like just sort of knuckling down and being like, I'm gonna try and contact people and find this ROM, and she succeeded, and it was really cool.
Yes. All right. Next up is best live stream. This is for a live stream that happened live. I know that sounds weird, but we have, like, when people talk about streaming stuff nowadays, a lot of times they mean, like, on Netflix or Disney Plus or something. So this is specifically for live streams, and not just live streamers, but specific streams.
Yes.
So without further ado,
the nominees are the Germa 985 Dollhouse. This was a massive undertaking by Germa 985, Germa as he is colloquially known, to kind of like replicate The Sims and have his viewership play him as a Sim. He did a really good job at sort of acting like a Sim acts, but also his running commentary that was sort of very antagonistic with chat was also just a wonderful time. He is one of the most interesting content creators probably ever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's an understatement. Ludwig Subathon, as mentioned previously, Ludwig had a 30-day stream, I think even higher than 30 days.
It was at least a month.
Yeah, but yeah, he got enough subs to basically break a world record, and it kind of just repeat what I said before. A lot of interesting collabs, a lot of, you know, just really long form, and it was a wonderful, wonderful little moment in Twitch history.
Sprunk moment. This specifically refers to a Vinesauce Joel stream, Varg Skeletor, where he played the Grand Theft Auto Trilogy remaster and proceeded to spend 500 in-game dollars on soda from a soda machine, which ended up crashing the game and corrupting his save file on his Switch. It's sort of, for a while, Sprunk was starting to become a, like, slang colloquialism for things crashing, especially related to games. But the whole time he was drinking it, he also was, like, playing inspirational power metal and playing a video of a guy cosplaying Big Smoke chugging a 2-liter. It was sort of just a fever dream experience to be had, but it was one of the best jokes, one of the best bits of a live stream all year.
And also one of the quickest turnarounds from VOD to highlight video.
Yes, Joel is notorious for having late highlight videos. Funny Rave presents Sweet Baby Raves. Funny Rave is a internet rave music festival held on Twitch, where basically just a lot of different artists do different sets that are about 30 minutes to an hour long. And these range from anywhere from, like, DJs to electronic artists to rock artists to YouTube music video makers, mashup artists, a whole slew of sort of modern-day internet-based music subcultures. And Funny Rave is where it all kind of coalesces into a funny rave.
And finally, Tim Heidecker's Office Hours. As mentioned before, it was Tim Heidecker and two other comedians sort of playing the role of a Jim Rogan.
Jim Rogan. Hi, I'm Jim Rogan.
Hi, I'm Jim Rogan. I'm the negative universe Joe Rogan.
I question my guest topics. I bring in cited sources.
I do not take horse paste.
I take vaccinations.
Yes, there isn't a whole lot that I can say that wasn't already said by Matthew. So do we want to continue to our honorable mention?
Yes, honorable mention goes to Trial by Fieri, the Griffin McElroy Legend of Zelda A Link to the Past randomizer run, where he plays as Guy Fieri and has to get the Pizza Force. It just recently started, which is why it's in the honorable mentions, but it is a really enjoyable time, both because the concept is funny and because he is playing a one-hit randomizer where he dies in one hit. And so seeing him power through the randomizer is quite an experience.
And the winner of Best Live Stream of 2021 is the Germa 985 Dollhouse.
Yeah, Germa is your favorite streamer's favorite streamer. He always does really interesting things. It should be noted that the main people behind the actual plugin was Kryken in his company, and a lot of that back end wouldn't have happened without him. They also just had stellar direction getting everything coordinated, everybody kind of collaboratively improvising different solutions based on what chat did. Also, there were guest appearances by Ludwig and Kit Boga, which were very good. The whole stream is fantastic, but it was a whole production by more than just Germa, of course, and I don't think that can go unsaid.
So with live stream, we move on to the exact opposite of a live stream, which is a stream that isn't live.
These are best edited content for content that is not quite long, though maybe long, but not live streamed. Instead, edited scripted content, mainly YouTube videos. I think all of these technically are YouTube videos.
Yeah.
But these are not corporate productions. They're not big. These are small creators.
Yeah. And the nominees are
Action Button Reviews Cyberpunk 2077. Not much else to say.
Noah Gervais's Resident Evil video. Once again, not a whole lot else to say. We've already talked about him.
Donkey's Week of Bad Videos. This was the week where he decided to stop making good videos and proceeded to do a huge satire of the YouTube and Twitch metagame, including, three Among Us videos.
And, three videos where he cancels various Among Us video dates.
This is also where he put up a Jake Paul poster in his streaming room, and it kept falling down. And so by the end, it was, horribly torn up and covered in tape.
Oh, man. The final Devolver Direct. I believe we spoke of this, and yeah, it was a quite momentous occasion to get a Devolver Direct that, kind of continued the story, but not really. And, Devolver Direct has always been probably the most looked forward to, E3 presentation for internet nerds like us, it always is.
For the past 5 or so years since they've been doing them, I mean.
Yeah, and so, it's sort of insane that it's the final one, but I'm really happy that it ended on such an interesting note.
Mm-hmm. The H.H. Gregg collab. The H.H. Gregg collab was a massive hour and a half long YTPMV collab hosted by Torjas. And it is just sort of a culmination of the YouTube Poop Music Video community. There's a lot of art, a lot of attention to detail, a lot of really clever ideas, all centered around a shared source of the H.H. Gregg Christmas in July commercial, as well as a few other H.H. Gregg things and Cheezosaurus Rex, the Kraft Mac and Cheese commercial. It is a sort of just a roller coaster of internet art at its finest.
And finally, the Mandela catalog. Analog horror really shot up this year. There's been a lot of examples like Local 58 or, Alex Kansas. For my money, the Mandela catalog is probably the most interesting and I think was the most sort of widely sort of recognized, even if it was in memes. It is a really well done series. And I think that it is probably the best sort of you know, single, like, if you want an example of what analog horror has to offer, the Mandela catalog is where you want to start. Even if there's some very silly parts, it's still very, like, part of the charm, I would think.
And the winner is the H.H. Gregg collab. Yeah, it's hard to explain if you're not familiar with YouTube Poop Music Video, but even just listen to any 10 minutes of this and you'll kind of understand the undertaking that went into this.
Yes, a single like YTPMV is its own undertaking, and so to get an hour and a half full of content of just a whole bunch of creators getting in using one source and still making it their own is, like, absolutely insane.
Yes. All right, so we're switching gears a bit, because we've talked about good things, but now we're going to talk about bad things.
Yes.
This is a special category called Dumpster Fire of the Year.
Yes, we don't want the whole thing to be negative, we only want a little bit to be negative, but there are some funny things that are just absolute trash that we really want to highlight as just the pinnacle of terrible things.
And without further ado, the nominees are the Grand Theft Auto Remaster Trilogy. It is Rockstar took three of the most beloved video games they've ever touched and made them not really bad, but they've just brought with them so many issues from, like, bugs and weird remaster things, like that bug where it flattens a car if you drive left and right, or how they had a lot of upscaled textures that they didn't quality check. So a lot of them have, like, jokes that were just ruined by the AI upscaling it incorrectly. It feels more like a uncooked product rather than a joyful celebration of San Andreas and Vice City and that other one.
Cyberpunk 2077 was not strictly a terrible game exactly, but it was this year's and possibly even, like, of the past 5 years, like, the example of a very hyped, very long-running studio putting out a product that everybody's been excited for and it just super not delivering. It has been definitely mentioned multiple times that it is not really punk at all.
And hardly cyber.
Yeah. It's not like terrible. If it was just a game that was put out, it might not have been terrible, but, like, the massive hype and the constant missteps and the constant delays just buried any chance of it really sort of capturing what it intended to. And add on top of that a lot of, you know, technical bugs and even non-technical issues with the game. It is quite a journey. The Red Ape Family. Hey, NFTs were this year. And one company attempted to sort of garner interest in the brand by making a cartoon of NFTs that you could then buy the cartoon episodes of. And they made the Red Ape Family. And I've watched all of it. It sucks. It's not even really funny bad. It just kind of sucks.
It's hard to make a cartoon, but they also just have, like the animation isn't just generic animation. It's like generic animation with a lack of direction and, like, a lack of understanding of cartoons.
It's like if someone who hadn't actually seen any adult animated show tried to make, like, a Netflix adult animated show level animated show.
Yeah. YouTube disabling dislikes. This was a thing that YouTube tried to sort of excuse as being for creators, but it's pretty much just to protect the, like, brand partners, the like, big companies that upload their clips to YouTube, because that's a large part of YouTube's audience nowadays. But most creators don't really care about this. And it had the unintended side effect of, like, taking culturally significant videos that were, like, notoriously disliked and just removing all dislikes from them. And so people either would, like, joke about how good they were or people would make comments saying, like this comment to dislike the video. It's another feature that got removed by YouTube, making old references to it sort of archaic, but it's also a feature that nobody really wanted to remove other than, you know, like the people in charge of uploading Jimmy Fallon episodes. Cowboy Bebop Netflix adaptation. Netflix keeps making bad live-action anime adaptations. This one has the also side effect of having really poorly written dialogue that is not funny. And, you know, Cowboy Bebop is interesting because it's, like, already a pretty Western series in genre and in tone. And the anime is, like, one of the most popular, like, anime to show people who don't watch anime because of how approachable it is. And so it's such a weird choice to make a reboot of. But also, they just have not had good live-action anime reboots. And they already canceled the show.
And finally, Martin Luther King in Fortnite. We talked about this in one of our Talk Surfer shows, the very first one, I think. But yes, Fortnite as a multiverse property really has... It's really hard to say anything sort of meaningful when you are a property that has Rick Sanchez and the Alien and Ryu and Kratos and Master Chief. So...
And Naruto now.
Yeah, and fucking Naruto. And Jinx. How long until they just add a Magic the Gathering character?
I'll give it a month.
But yes, I really think that all those characters learned something about systematic racism.
You think they'll ever learn that lesson in the real world, Luigi?
Morty, we gotta stop systematic racism, Morty. I saw a really cool speech from Martin Luther King, Morty. So those are all of the nominees, but we do have a dishonorable mention, which is Activision Blizzard. If you don't know what's going on with ActiBliz, massive trigger warning, if you decide to look it up. We're not going to specifically mention, any of it here, but we try to kind of keep this a little bit no bummers, a little bit, you know, sort of lighthearted.
Yeah, we wanted these to be things you could point at and laugh, in, like, the Farquaad style, but... Not, like, serious, serious deals, but the Activision Blizzard stuff is very serious.
Yeah. The only comment I have is just remember that ActiBliz is the only one... ActiBliz is in the news because they are getting caught out and are being so transparently shitty about it, but, like, pretty much every big AAA publisher and a lot of big AAA developers have the same problems.
Yes.
Including Riot Games.
Yes, Riot Games. Ubisoft as well. They still haven't really made any changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But getting back to it, our winner for Dumpster Fire of the Year is...
Cyberpunk 2077. I want to mention that it's not just the game at times, it's everything around it. Like how... There was a reviewer that had epileptic seizures because one of the artists in the game implemented a color pattern that was known to give people epileptic seizures.
I had forgotten about that. Yeah, there's like a literal medically to induce seizures thing.
Yeah. Or the fact that like there's all the Keanu Reeves-ness going on around it and how it kind of turned into a giant meme before it even started. Or... Yeah, how it handled that whole, like, image of a trans person controversy.
God, yeah.
There's a lot to comment about Cyberpunk that isn't in the game, and then there's also a lot to comment about it that's in the game.
Yeah.
Like how it botched any sort of RPG progression it was intended to have.
I would argue that the biggest, most egregious in-game thing... Possibly even a little bit beyond, like, the trans quote-unquote controversy. I say quote-unquote because it's just CDPR being shitty to trans people. Is the Judy questline where you create, like, a worker-owned... You create, like, a worker-owned, like, bar prostitute, like, dancer thing. And it's, like, a really cool ending. And then the game, the very next mission with Judy is... they killed everyone, and it's like, okay, cool, thanks. like, I'm very glad that you've taken the stance that worker-owned co-ops can't work in, like, oppressive regimes. I'm really glad that, you know, you've decided against saying anything meaningful about, like, you know, employees owning the means of production in favor of fucking more, you know, grim, dark bullshit.
Ugh. Yeah, that's cyberpunk. Let's go back to good things.
So yes,
the next category is streamable thing of the year. This is because we didn't watch TV, but we did watch quote-unquote TV for shows that were uploaded to streaming services. This is essentially TV show of the year, but none of these were on TV.
And the nominees are... Inside. We had a whole episode over Inside, Bo Burnham's magnum opus of 2021, and also really the only thing that he did in 2021. But yeah, it was absolutely wonderful. It very much encapsulated the whole pandemic experience, and was a lot of it was very funny on top of it as well. I still sing a lot of the songs. Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun, another one we did an episode over. It was probably one of the best, like, comedy shows on Netflix of the year. The Auntie Donna boys are very talented and very funny, and they had a lot of good remixes on their old content, as well as a lot of original content, and it is just really, really wonderful.
Ted Lasso Season 2. Ted Lasso is a like, surprisingly positive comedy. There's a lot of comedies that are negative or are about horrible people, but very rarely do you get one that's about people who are generally, like, good and trying to help others for the better, and they, like, learn and grow for the better. Ted Lasso is inspiring, and Ted Lasso Season 2 just further analyzes that. It builds off of the first season in a way that feels meaningful rather than repetitive. And Invincible, the superhero series, the adaptation of the comic of the same name, a surprisingly brutal at times series, but of course it was written by Robert Kirkman, so it makes sense. Invincible is a fantastic sort of adult animated series. It's not crass, it is, you know, smart. It's very, very, like, realistic in some ways. It has really good character relations. It also has one of J.K. Simmons' best performances, which is a high bar to fill. And it gave us some really good memes. I didn't even put the Invincible memes in the, oops, I might have spoiled the category.
Oh no.
But, yeah, it's a great series, great action, good choreography.
And those are all of the, those are all of the choices this year, the nominees. But we do have an honorable mention, which is, Squid Game.
Neither of us have watched it. It's very culturally relevant. It kind of blew up, which was surprising for a series in Korean. And it was proceeded to be completely taken out of its intended message.
Yep.
With people misrepresenting it. It did make me want to read Kaiji again, though, so that's good.
If you haven't seen Squid Game, go ahead and just look up Squid Game, Fortnite, FNAF. No, it's Squid Game, FNAF, Bendy, Friday Night Funkin' animation, and you'll find a cool thumbnail. I won't spoil the surprise of what it has.
And the winner is...
Inside.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, Inside.
It's haunting. It's beautiful.
It sticks with you, probably for years to come.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Burnham is a very talented creator, and as sort of mentioned before, like, it's a really interesting look into the creative process, especially under duress, kind of, and under the stress of a pandemic that we are still kind of going through. So, yeah, it is a absolutely wonderful piece of art.
Our next category is Surprise of the Year, and here to introduce it is Cypher from Valorant. Come on stage.
Hey, I'm so glad I could be here. Hey. You know, after you gave me that job for the whole internet creepypasta part, I was kind of wondering that I wouldn't come back here, but, you know, I'm so glad that you guys could have me again. Oh, am I supposed to be reading off the nominees now? Do I need to do this?
I mean, do you want to? We can take it back over from you.
You know what? I'll read this for Galen's spot. Galen, you can go sit over there. Oh, thank you, Cypher. I'm just gonna sit down. Just gonna sit down over here. Awesome. Now, the nominees are Mario Party Superstars. This was an interesting sort of reveal to release. And, you know, considering that the previous Mario Party game on Switch was a little bit you know, it could very easily could have been, you know, just kind of a flop. But no, it really did capture the magic from the previous games, picked a lot of the really good ones, even from past 3. And it's a really complete Mario Party package. Hope they release some new boards, but it is still very, very good.
Dirt on the Lens, Idea Channel, or PBS Idea Channel, was sort of an early adopter of the video essay format and structure and sort of brand. And the guy behind it had kind of not done any content for years until this year when he released Dirt on the Lens, which is a pretty straightforward video essay on immersion in media, sort of talking about like the magic circle and suspension of disbelief and actual like experiments done relating to those. It's very interesting if you're into the sort of greater meta science of entertainment, as well as just somebody who is, you know, maybe at the peak of their field. Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl. Not All-Star Battle, which is a JoJo's game subtitle. Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl is a platform fighter featuring Nickelodeon characters, and it's made by the devs of Slap City, and so it is actually a very well-made fighting game for the most part. The biggest problems are problems that Nickelodeon itself imposed, but the game itself is very solid, and they are still adding content to it. They just added Garfield.
Deltarune Chapter 2. Deltarune, obviously, the kind of sequel, not exactly sequel, to Undertale by Toby Fox, got the Chapter 2 patch, kind of out of nowhere. Honestly, I kind of think a lot of people were expecting Chapter 1 was always going to see. But then Toby Fox put out Chapter 2 and had sort of a more concrete announcement over, you know, how many chapters it'd have and stuff. And it really injected a lot of lifeblood into the fandom, and it was a wonderful game on its own merits as well. So yeah, can't wait for the full package.
And the Smash Bros. Fighter Pack 2. Smash Bros. Ultimate, of course, is done adding characters and updates to the game, but Fighter Pack 2 gave us some of the most interesting characters, such as Minecraft, and Kazuya from Tekken, and Sora from Kingdom Hearts. These are characters that nobody would have thought would be in Smash, and not only are they in Smash, but they also have pretty interesting and neat character sort of movesets. Smash is really an ultimate package of crossovers now, it feels. And that's also not to mention Sans and Shantae that were added as Mii costumes. Gotta add Sans and Shantae as Mii costumes.
And with that, the winner of this year's Surprise of the Year... Oh, hang on one sec. Let me get out of here so that Galen can come back. Oh yeah, thank you, Cypher. Hey, don't let the door hit you on the way out. Anyway, the Surprise of the Year is...
Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl.
This is a game that makes me feel like I can tech, despite not really knowing how to.
This is a game that... It was like a perfect idea. You know, maybe the execution wasn't perfect, but I think the acceptance of like the indie platform fighter community scene in making a game for a big name like Nickelodeon ended up making a good game rather than just like hiring a shovelware studio, and it ended up making a good game. It's hard to really say much else on it.
Yeah,
you can have Patrick Starr, you know, slam dunk people into the blast zone against, like, Ong, who's doing funny airspin moves.
And making a funny face with his taunt. Yeah, it is slightly jank in the best possible way, and, honestly, like a really good sort of step up from, I think it's a really good step up from Ultimate without being as technical as something like Melee.
Yeah. So next we have Meme of the Year. This is the one I briefly spoiled that will not have any Invincible memes, even though there were a lot of Invincible memes.
A lot of really good Invincible memes that,
yes,
that seem to be sticking around.
These are memes that aren't just, like, funny, but they are interesting to some way. And that's why we have them on this list.
Yeah.
We tried to not get too recency biased with it, though, so, you know, hopefully we did well. The nominees are... Orb Pondering. Somebody found a cover of a Lord of the Rings book that had a wizard pondering an orb, and it was the right amount of non sequitur, silly, and genre to be a funny meme. And then people started adding, like, other orbs and characters in it, like Kirby as the orb. And it just kind of went from there. Everybody loves a wizard pondering its orb.
Mordecai and Twilight Airplanes. This was a strange image that was created, I believe, years ago, but it really blew up this year.
This strange image was made on DeviantArt, but nobody knows who posted it. Sorry, continue.
You're good. I think just the wonderful sort of absolute bonkers bullshit of the image and the sort of crack ship really got people to, you know, fall in love with it. I also think that, I will say, I feel like one small part that might have helped it was this was around the time of ivermectin, and so people were talking about horses a lot.
I also love when people made it good. They took the shitty art and, like, redrew it themselves.
Yeah.
Also, Haley from Paramore retweeted it, which was great itself. Among Us crewmate looks-alikes. I think this started this year. It's kind of hard to say given the general time frame of the last 2 years, but this is sort of everything that looks like a crewmate from Among Us. It is the sort of, how do I put it? It's the new current look-alike meme based on, like, a generic form, and that leads to people finding crewmates everywhere. But I think adding to it, not just the popularity of Among Us, but the joke of, like, crewmates trying to hide to kill you makes it even funnier that this could be an imposter trying to stab you, but it's just, like, a cookie that someone took a bite out of, or a chair, or a trash can. We did a pretty deep dive into this meme in general, too.
Yeah. The Ever Given. This was the boat that got stuck in January. It was the only good week of this year. Not maybe on a personal level, but probably on a world level. It was just a really, really, I wouldn't call it wholesome exactly because it stopped global trade, but it was very positive because it stopped global trade.
Everybody had one thing to talk about, and that was what was positive.
Yeah. And finally, Post This Cat. This one was kind of more Discord localized. There were a lot of images that were kind of like effectively playing on the sort of repost nature of various Discord images. A kind of common Discord meme is like talking about how you take one image in one server and then post it in every other server. And so the Post This Cat meme was, I think, born of that, where, it, like, you know, one would be like, post this cat instantly, and then post this cat with considerable delay, and post this cat whenever you like, and it was just a really fun meme to me. I think it played on the social trends, but without necessarily being negative. And also, seeing cats is always a plus.
And the winner is...
Can we pretend like airplanes in the night sky are like shooting stars? I could really use a wish right now.
Horse right now. Horse right now. It's Mordecai and Twilight. This also had the sort of form recognition meme going on.
Yeah.
Where, like, blue and purple, especially in that specific colors, sort of became like that. I saw one of, like, a blue and a purple eraser, for example, just next to each other.
One of my favorite little things was, I think I mentioned this in a previous episode, was someone who like, painted Mordecai on one side of their face, and then Twilight on the other. And so they would, like, sing one line, and then turn around and sing the other. It was so good. It's the perfect blend of, like, kind of funny and wholesome, but like also definitely a shitpost.
High effort shitpost.
Yeah.
All right, so the next category is pretty much just going to be me talking about it.
Yeah.
This is anime of the year. I watched anime this year. There was a lot of good anime this year.
I technically watched anime this year, but I didn't watch any of this year's anime. Unless you, I guess, technically count JoJo's Part 6 Stone Ocean, but I didn't even watch all of that.
That was also very recent, and so it's not on here.
Yeah.
So I guess that's our honorable mention at the start.
Yeah, honorable mention, JoJo's is a good series as much as it's memed on. And Part 6 was, from what I've seen, very interesting.
Sort of the Undertale of anime. Sort of the Persona 5 of anime.
Oh my god. Yeah, this kind of... Yeah, this means it's giving me some JoJo's Bizarre Adventure vibes.
It's just fucking prog rock.
God.
All right. So, anime of the year, your nominees are Skate the Infinity, the gay skateboarding anime. It's pretty obvious that the characters are meant to be that. But it's about skateboarding, but it's about like downhill skateboarding, but they still talk about like the technique behind skateboarding. It does a really interesting thing where the main character isn't good at the skateboarding. Instead, he's smart about it, and so he's like a skateboard technician. He engineers clever implementations of skateboards. It gets a little sort of cartoony at times, like the guy that has a robot skateboard, but overall it's a fun ride. Wonder Egg Priority, the series about death and grief that kind of shit the bed in the last two episodes, including the OVA, but other than that, it's a fantastic sort of psychological journey through the four main characters. Vivi, Fluorite Eyes Song. It's a solid sci-fi series. The main character is essentially Hatsune Miku. If Hatsune Miku was told to fight because the future will lead to the destruction of humanity. But I think it does an interesting job of like sort of contextualizing each of the major events in the series and how it eventually leads to this future they're trying to prevent. And it does some cool things here and there. Has some good music. Odd Taxi. It is, a lot of people describe it as if Tarantino mixed with Zootopia, but I feel like that is selling it short. Odd Taxi is part crime drama, part slice of life, part manzai comedy that sort of examines the passage of professions, the sort of, the ability or the tendency for people to sort of fall into obscurity over time. Or lose touch with what's new and hip. And it's got a really cool walrus as the main character. The Idaten Deities Only Know Peace. A acid-washed sort of art style over a battle anime that is almost entirely battles. And it is like high octane battles. Like they skip the characters powering up. The characters are practically immortal. They just get hurt a lot, but it leads to people getting thrown around and punched around really heavily, getting exploded all over, leading to just some very high adrenaline fights. And the winner is... Odd Taxi.
Damn it, I thought it was going to be JoJo.
Check out Odd Taxi. If there's one anime to watch from this year, it's that. It's maybe in my top three? Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite video of Odd Taxis is the one where he has the rant about about a young girl, and it goes on for a hot minute, and it's a really good copypasta.
Oh, my favorite Odd Taxi is the one where he goes autoerotic asphyxiation.
Neon Genesis Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes. All right, next up is a category that Galen can talk about. This is Album of the Year for musical albums. Music of the Year. There's a lot of music this year. A lot that we didn't listen to.
But also, some that we did listen to.
And these are the best of the ones we did listen to. Without further ado, the nominees are... Zootomayo, Gusare. The second album by Zootomayo... I feel like we just covered Zootomayo, so check out those episodes if you're interested in the band. The album is very well put together, has a lot of different songs with different vibes and moods. I have to give a shout out to Hava and Engine Oil, my two favorite songs by them that don't have music videos. Michael M, Glasgow Moths. Michael M is sort of a comedy rock artist, but not really, using lo-fi rock sort of sounds to make funny and sometimes poignant content about things like the internet and how it makes us hate things, or, how the subjectivity of experience in life. Or sometimes it's funny things like a person who keeps getting into fights even though they don't mean to.
Michael M is honestly kind of a, like, an honorable mention for small creator as well. Absolutely subscribe to Michael M if you have never heard of him, because he deserves way more attention.
All his music videos are done using default Shutterstock free artwork, and it's pretty great.
Yeah, look up Shutterstock and Roll. It's a really good introduction to him.
Mm-hmm. That's from his first album, though. But also check out his new album.
Yeah. Sugar Rush High, Space Hay. This was one I talked about on Talk Surface Show. It's a very, like, hyper-pop by way of mid-2000s kind of, like weird music, in a real, and I mean that in the most positive way. It has the sound of mid-2000s hyper-pop, like I said, but it is clearly about, like, modern-day sort of, like, relationships, or like, you know, parasocial relationships, maybe. It's definitely sort of like a niche that you have to have, like a niche interest you have to have, but like, it is done exceedingly well, in my opinion.
We Are the Union, Ordinary Life. We Are the Union is a ska punk band that's been around for a while, and this is their most recent album, also one of their most powerful albums, as a sort of mix of meditations on 2020's anxieties and gender experience. It sort of coincided with the lead of the band's coming out as a trans woman, and so there's a lot of songs about that and about other sort of finding yourself and your identity. And even if you're not trans, it's still very relatable, and it is a great sort of example of the modern ska scene, the new tone scene, as it's called.
And fittingly, last is Pluffaduff, The Last Laugh. Pluffaduff is a mashup artist who has been around for a few years, done a lot of really good work, and had put out The Last Laugh, intending it to be the last mashup album that he ever did. I believe he, right?
Yeah.
And it ultimately was not. He then put out Baby I'm Back 5, which is the fifth of a trilogy using certain...
Fifth of a trilogy, yes.
Fifth of a trilogy. Using certain sources, especially songs about being back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, The Last Laugh was put out intending to be a sort of final hurrah, and it is very funny, very well put together, and also just absolute bops.
And the winner of Album of the Year goes to Zutamayo Gusare. This should be no surprise if you've listened to us at all.
Yes.
This year.
We basically just talked about Zutamayo, so like, yeah. Quite enjoy us some Zutamayo, quite enjoy us Nira and Unigiri.
And Akane, or Akab,
as I prefer to call her.
Engine Oil's the one where she hits a microwave with a drumstick. It's a good song. Check it out. So next we have the meat and potatoes, our final two subjects for today. Subjects, categories for today. These are Indie Game of the Year and Game of the Year, non-indie. First, we're going to do Indie Game of the Year.
Yes.
I think, I just want to go on a brief tangent that, like, I've heard a lot of people say it's been a weak year for video games, but I think it's just because there hasn't been a cultural touchstone AAA, like God of War or Last of Us 2. Cyberpunk technically came out last year, but even then it wasn't a touchstone in the same way as those. But I think this year has had some incredible games, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Well, today, here, and now. So your nominees for Indie Game of the Year are... Unsighted, a lesbian Metroidvania action-adventure game that has some really smooth combat, really fast-paced, snappy movement, a super open world that doesn't feel as open as it is, but every time I've played through it, which has been about three times, has like seemed way more open than before. I keep finding like sequence breaks and stuff, and it has great characters and a pretty cool story. Bonfire Peaks, a puzzle game about burning your belongings and reaching a catharsis. It is very, very heartwarming, to use a pun, but also like very emotional at times, very tender. But it's also backed by a just super well-designed puzzle game that takes a lot of notes and inspiration from other puzzle games, especially like Steven Sausage Roll, but remixes them in ways that feel fresh and interesting. And every level has had interesting twists and like revelations on the rule set of the game. Everhood, a rhythm RPG that takes a lot of inspiration from different like indie RPGs in that scene, but also has a interesting combat system that is sort of based on vertical scrolling rhythm games, and a story that is ultimately about like the acceptance of death and the like rejection of immortality in a way that is very interesting to see. Not the only game that has that theme on this year, by the way.
Loop Hero. I was honestly surprised that this one came out this year, because it seems like it came out a long time ago, but Loop Hero is an absolutely, like, one of the most interesting roguelikes of not directly controlling your character, but sort of putting down tiles that your character walks through in order to have your character fight things, get stronger, etc. And it has one of the more interesting, like, themes surrounding it. I wouldn't call it as good as, like, Hades, necessarily, but it is certainly, like, especially for an original theme, it sort of deals with like a world that has literally sort of gone void, and so you sort of rebuild reality, and it uses its theme exceptionally well. It has like it has really interesting gameplay considerations, especially for the genre, and for some reason the main character is absolutely fucking adorable. I love him. For some reason they just decided to give this nameless main character the cutest face. I don't know why.
Also, it's the best tower defense of the year.
Inscription. This is one that I need to finish desperately, but what you need to know for the introduction, at the very least, is that it is a card game about sacrificing animals to bring out bigger animals to tip a scale, but then it also has elements of like escape the room puzzles, where you can literally physically get up from the map to try and, you know, complete puzzles to get more cards, or more opportunities for more cards. It also has just like a really interesting way of telling that story, with this like weird captor who keeps putting on different masks to be different characters. It has thus far in the first portion, I would say it has probably one of my favorite like final bosses and final boss themes, of like the guy sort of putting on different masks to do all of the different things. And oh man, it is, I am apparently not even like into the big portions of the game, and I am still like absolutely fucking blown away at how interesting and wonderfully cool it is.
Yeah, part of why Galen's describing this is because I would probably spoil some of it. I would say if you like card games and roguelikes, go into it unspoiled.
Yeah.
Especially if you like card games. And finally, Axiom Verge 2. The sequel to Axiom Verge, which was a pretty good Metroidvania about sort of corrupting a world, like a digital world. Axiom Verge 2 is a prequel to the first game, and it has a more natural world, a more like physical, inspired by the real world type world. But it has also just some very solid Metroidvania pacing, a good mix of exploration and story, a really snappy movement and like really fun movement as you get more upgrades, which is always a plus, and some really interesting twists and surprises along the way. An honorable mention to Chicory, A Colorful Tale, which I would probably enjoy based on everything I've seen. I just have not played it.
I would actually also like to interject my own honorable mention, which is Eastward, which is a, like, pixelated, I think Tim Rogers would call it the Baby Child Big Friend game, inspired by Earthbound, that sort of thing, by Chucklefish. I was really interested in it, and I was really hyped to see it actually come out, and I still need to play it.
I'd also like to give an honorable mention to The Binding of Isaac Repentance. The Binding of Isaac Rebirth came out a while ago, but Repentance is a large content update that basically turned it into a new game between all the new items that were added and doubling the cast of characters and then some. It's what got me into playing Isaac finally, but it is, like, I can't imagine playing it without all these changes. It's great.
I would like to give an honorable mention to Deep Rock Galactic, which kind of officially released last year, but very recently put out a Battle Pass system that has absolutely no purchasing, has semi-exclusive items that are only earned through playing it, and has guarantees that when the Battle Pass is done, you will still be able to get those items through normal gameplay as well.
And I would like to give an honorable mention to Echoes of the Eye, the Outer Wilds DLC, which is the DLC to one of my favorite games of all time. I have not finished it because it's spoopy.
And I'd like to give an honorable mention to Paper Mario, the original one, which I'm only now playing through because of Nintendo Switch Online.
It's not even an indie game. All right, the winner of Indie Game of the Year is...
Inscription. Yes, as Matthew has said, I'm describing this because otherwise there would be massive spoilers. I have not even been spoiled that much. I've been spoiled very slightly about the thing that's in the trailer, so I guess it's not strictly a spoiler. But yeah, it is very much one of the more interesting roguelikes of this year. And I mean, considering it's from the developer of Pony Island, it's no wonder that it has just like absolutely insane fucking twists and turns.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, anything to add?
Nope. I okay. already said everything. It's a great game. I can't spoil anything else, though.
Yeah, that's fair.
And finally, we have Game of the Year.
Goaty.
For non-indie games. There's still a lot of good non-indie games this year.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't really play any of them.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I didn't play a whole lot of indie games this year, to be fair, as well, though. So,
I played too many games. So, yeah, let's get into the nominees, I guess. Psychonauts 2. It is my fourth favorite game of all time. I talked about it in my favorite games episode, in our My Favorite Games episode, our top five games episode. It's great. It's fantastic. It does things the original game tried to do but couldn't quite reach. It does things you can only do in a video game. It is one of the best representations of mental health in a video game. It's great.
I will add that while I haven't finished it, it feels so much like just a game. A lot of the gameplay things feel like, you know, they are of sort of their era. It feels like Psychonauts 2 could have probably been released like closer to Psychonauts 1 as a genuine sequel from how well it treats the like gameplay aspects of it.
Deathloop, Arkane's newest game about time looping. Maybe not the best time loop game, maybe not the best of this year.
No, that one was 12 minutes, clearly.
But it was a fantastic sort of stealth game mixed with action game where you're not really punished for de-stealthing, but it still makes you think about what you're doing. It has some great characters, great gunplay, great level design. You know, it's Arkane at sort of their best in a way. And also, it is the other game that talks about themes relating to death and immortality. And it has an Among Us joke. It's not really Among Us, but it's sort of Among Us.
God.
Deathloop is pretty great. Yeah. Metroid Dread. It's the new Metroid. It is refreshing to see that the people who make Metroid can still make a Metroid that's on par with other Metroidvanias. You know, there's been almost exclusively indie games in that sort of genre in the past few years, many of which are very good. And so it's cool to see a new Metroid come out that is still very good as well. There's a lot of control updates that have sort of made it fit more in with modern sensibilities. And it's the conclusion to a like storyline that's been going since the Nintendo Entertainment System, which is wild.
Hitman 3, The World of Assassination Trilogy. Yeah, Hitman is... The new Hitmans are probably the best Hitman games. And so the World of Assassination trilogy just sort of gives you all of that. But on top of that, it also closes the story of the Hitman new trilogy, reboot trilogy. And
yeah.
it's very interesting. They do the same twist that they've done like three other times. But the gameplay and the sort of like, you know, semi-randomized, but also still very like, very... you know, memorization-based gameplay is still sort of exceptional, and it probably, it deserves every accolade it's got.
It has some of the best levels in the trilogy, and I don't say that lightly. I have made two tier lists over the levels of this game. And it has a really interesting detective level. Yeah, and it does the thing, like you said, the twist it's always done, which is Diana holding a football and waiting for 47 to kick it. Yeah. Neo, The World Ends With You, the sequel to my favorite game of all time. It is, it takes the foundation of the original and kind of turns some of the knobs and adjusts some of the levers in a way that not only makes the rules of the game within a game feel fresh, but makes them feel aggressive and, like, hostile to where you kind of know that something's wrong. It is a very convoluted plot, but I personally enjoy that. Its visuals and sound are all as good as they've ever been. It's still like some of the most fresh character designs and music. And the combat's really cool with sort of a character action tag fighter hybrid going on. It's a complete package, I would say. It's just a phenomenal game. Has some lag on the Switch, though. And Guilty Gear Strive, the fighting game that could... No, it's Guilty Gear Strive kind of... made fighting games popular again. Fighting games have been going through a bit of a renaissance, but I think Strive was the perfect mix of like aesthetics that appealed to a lot of people, with it definitely being the best looking fighting game out there. Gameplay that was simplified in some aspects to make it more approachable. Rollback netcode, meaning that it had the potential to have an active player base without bad connections or bad lag. I don't have enough time to get into rollback now, but it's a good thing overall. And it's kind of proven now to developers that rollback is the future. And of course, character designs that people memed. But Guilty Gear Strive is just a solid fighting game that's pretty well balanced. And it being successful, I think overall, is a good thing for the genre.
I have my own honorable mention this year, which is Persona 5 Strikers. It's not on this list because it's not a great game.
Okay.
But I like Persona 5. And mm-hmm. I bought this and then didn't finish it.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see more Persona 5 in the world.
My honorable mention is BlazBlue Central Fiction, which didn't come out this year at all, but it did get a rollback update, and it is one of my favorite fighting games of all time. It is always very fun to play, even if I'm getting absolutely demolished.
Oh, wait, hang on. Can I change my answer?
Yeah.
I'd like to actually nominate SMT5, Shin Megami Tensei 5, for the honorable mention. I haven't played it, but, I mean, it's SMT. It's probably really good.
Probably. I like the main character's character design.
Yes. Very, very non-binary goals.
Yes. And the winner of Game of the Year, the prestigious NetSurfies Game of the Year Award, goes to...
This one gets a live drum roll because it's really important.
Yes. Psychonauts 2. It was snubbed at the Game Awards, but we've given it an award here. Psychonauts 2 is just... It's like, I think there's something to be said about games that like, use every part of the game to further its message or its theming or really experiments with the genre. And I think Psychonauts is both, like, very traditional in its game design, but also the way it implements those to tell the story is very forward-thinking, in a way that Double Fine has always been pretty good at.
Yeah, it's, the...
Also, now Galen has to finish it, because we gave it Game of the Year.
Yes.
And he has to uphold the opinion.
Yes.
Or else he is a faker.
Man.
Faker.
I found you, faker. Faker. Wait, hang on, I've got the voices backwards.
Yeah.
You've been doing good deeds under my name.
All right. Yeah. Not much else to say on that, I guess. Though, I did want to do a quick end-of-the-year recap.
Yes. We've talked about our favorites of the year, but let's talk about our true favorites of the year, which is ourselves.
Yes. So, this has been our first year of NetSurfer Pro. The next time you hear us will be NetSurfer Pro Year 2, which is also Season 2, which will only matter in the case of podcast apps that separate by season, so you can filter through episodes better. I don't know, maybe there'll be something new, I don't know. But I wanted to sort of run the numbers on what we covered, because we generally cover a lot of different things, and that's sort of by design. We wanted a space to talk about sort of whatever was interesting. And so I've run the numbers on the different categories of what we cover, and I want to do it from least to most. So with 4 episodes, we have covered TV shows 4 times, which mainly includes streaming services, so things like Auntie Donna and Azoken.
Yeah, obviously sort of streaming is the way of the future. Neither of us really have cable or anything, so it's a lot more curated, and so I feel like, you know, it's a lot easier to sit through. It's the meme of, you know, I can't start a whole new movie, but I can watch an entire show.
Yeah. Movies are next at 5, which includes, it's based on episodes we've done, though part 2-parters are not separate episodes, but this means like the Santa Claus trilogy is 1 episode in this case.
Yeah.
Because we treated them all as one whole.
And they certainly were all one whole.
Yeah, I think I just don't watch a lot of TV or movies, which is why these 2 combined are like still pretty low.
Yeah, I can't find it in myself to sit down and watch a movie, but I can find it in myself to watch 7 hours of Noah Cole Walter Bass.
Yes. I mean, I listen to that sometimes, to be fair.
Yeah. It's a lot of like YouTube videos that can go on my second monitor while I'm playing Crusader Kings on my first.
Yes. Speaking of listening, the next category is music with 8 episodes.
Music is very easy to listen to at work.
Yes, or while you're driving. It's easy to just, like, take it in sort of mostly its entirety. Yeah, it helps that we like music.
Yeah, it's insert Gabriel Gundacker video, a guy who likes music. Music is much more accessible if you're not a weirdo like me who listens to Scott the Waz episodes in the car. Then, yeah, it's just you have the most time to generally listen to music, so it would make sense that it is kind of in the middle of our, most popular topics.
And then our most common topics are tied for 10 episodes each.
Yes.
These are games, video games specifically. You know, we play a lot of video games, we talk a lot of video games. Some of the stuff we wanted to talk about from the start are video games. Some of my best friends are video games. video games. Doesn't surprise me at all.
And then, of course, the other number one is internet stuff at also 10, which also doesn't surprise me. That's sort of that was the idea of the podcast, is basically like curated internet content through us.
It's the net.
Internet. Net.
Yeah.
World Wide Web.
Internet stuff covers things that are inextricably linked to the internet. A lot of this was like animations and YouTube videos and stuff like that. You know, we had Little Runmo, we had Homestar Runner, but also like all of the creepypastas we did. There's a lot of things that also would sort of work as both internet stuff and another topic. Like Flash games, I put in games, but those are kind of internet stuff. Lonely Island, I put in music, but that's also internet stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of cross-genre topics that we talked about, and it does, a lot of times it really does boil down to, you know, we are children of the internet. The internet has kind of shaped our lives, and so it's interesting to sort of, you know, dissect it and study it from our own perspectives.
And then we've done 2 Talk Surface Show episodes, probably going to do more of those next year.
Yeah.
And that is it for your NetSurfer Wrapped. God, I hate how everything is doing Wrapped now. Like, it was cute when Spotify did it, but now it's like Nintendo Switch Wrapped. Oh boy, I bought 2 Nintendo Switch games this year. Which one did I play more?
Oh man, You can now tell me how much time I wasted playing fucking Skyrim in the year of our Lord 2021. Here's a hint. It's less than 1,000 hours and more than 200.
That's a pretty big range. If you guess the amount of hours Galen's played Skyrim in 2021, you'll win. Shout out.
you'll win this jar of Skyrim.
Yeah. Oh boy, I can't wait to guess the amount of jelly beans to earn the jar of jelly beans. They're all chocolate jelly beans. Except for one. One of them's the shit flavor.
Oh man, that would be the worst, like, guess the jelly beans, except that it's one of those where, you know, half of them are real flavors and half of them are bad flavors, and it's just an entire jar of them. But then here's the real prank. All of them are the bad flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Except one. One lucky boy.
One lucky boy will get the golden jelly bean, which tastes like real gold.
So yeah, that's been our 2021.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on your favorite podcasting platform. Follow NetSurfer Pro. Get updates on when our new episodes come out. You can also follow us on Twitter at NetSurfer Pro, where we tweet out little teasers for upcoming episodes. Our last remaining teaser from the last set of teasers is still in play for the next episode, which will be the first episode of next year.
Yeah.
So maybe you'll be able to figure that out, given the extra time. You can also follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming, where I tweet out whatever I'm working on or whatever I'm thinking about, or other fun tweets, fun retweets as well. And you can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. I stream on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Though recently I've been taking Wednesdays off to work on a video. So not really off, but off stream. But check that out. I stream roguelikes. I stream platformers, some speedruns maybe, some competitive games. I've been playing a lot of Teamfight Tactics and a lot of Hitman. So check that out.
Likewise, you can find me on Twitter and on TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GALENWRLS0N. I post my hot takes and pictures of my cat, and also videos of my cat on TikTok. I also had a recent video of a Jink controller that I got vibrating when playing Nintendo Switch Online. Don't know why, it nice. Just did. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. You know, there'll be a video there one day. Can't wait until I can actually be like, hey, go out, check out my new video that I actually made.
Yo, same.
And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. I have a couple ideas for streams that I need to do. I need to get Tomodachi Life running on an emulator, actually. I own it legally, for clarity, but I want to get the emulated version so that I can, you know, have the gay patch and stuff.
Yes, you have to install the gay mod.
Yes.
It's very important.
But yes, with that, thank you very much for listening. This has been the Net Surfies, the first annual of the Net Surfies. And we hope to continue this tradition for years to come.
And we hope to continue this podcast for years to come.
And we hope to continue living for years to come.
See you next year. Which can be abbreviated to SUNY.